Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is David Matthew Brown. He's an author, teacher, counsellor, metaphysician, and a former radio host of Inside Out. We're going to talk about his newest literary work, The Book of Light, The Heart Opening, and David describes it as a book which is a spiritual journey, a universal story of who we actually are and where we are headed. So, welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate it.
Now, I would imagine most people who sit down suddenly one day and decide to write a book feel inspired in some way. So let me ask you, what was it that brought you to write this particular book?
In this case, what pulled me to write this book was my divorce pulled me to write this book. I pretty much found myself, it felt like I got the wind knocked out of me, and I kind of went through a series of events that led me back into a longer meditation practice. And in that meditation, I hit the space of just calm, just complete calm. And in that calmness, it felt like my thoughts were like a lava lamp from like the 1970s, like kind of that bloop, and then a thought would come. And the thought that came to me at the time was, what is light? And without trying to dive into that question in my own practice, I just contemplated what is light. And from there, I just sat with that, and the idea started to swirl around, and as it swirled around, I got excited by it, and it was just a great inspiration that flowed out of me, and that started the Book of Light. That started the last chapter of the book is the first thing that I ever wrote, and it was from that deep silent space.
Obviously, people who haven't seen it or read it will not know that each chapter is in a series of what I would call statements, which you number all the way through. Now, when you were preparing for the book, meditating, did you receive each, shall we say, sentence or little paragraph one at a time? And were you concentrating, say, on what you needed for each chapter, or did you get a whole series of information and then put it into chapters afterwards? I mean, how did you come to write it that way?
That's a great question, and I'm glad that you asked me that. So I wrote the last chapter of the book, like you brought up, in the book they're described as books, just like the Book of Heart, the Book of Innocence. The books all lead to that final chapter, so they're guiding people into the final chapter of the book. But each individual chapter or book came to me in different spaces at different times. So I don't know which one I received first. I just know that here's the interesting thing. When I wrote the last chapter, I sent it out to one of my friends, and he said, David, this is really profound and very healing. I have no idea what you're talking about. Can you please simplify it? So I said, okay. So I sat with that. And just simplifying, and nothing really came through for maybe about a week or so, a couple weeks. And then the Book of Story came out.
Yeah.
And so it just flowed out of me, like the first chapter. So someone had asked me the other day if the book was channeled, because I stated in the book that it's not channeled. It's obviously channeled by Source itself, or by God, or by love, however you look at the consciousness itself. There's a channel from that place. Was I sitting down and trying to tap in and tap into a channel or tap into something? I was not at that time. But as I sit with the book more and read the book more, that book is still unfolding in my own life and a lot of other people's lives that are reading the book. So there is probably something there that maybe down the road I'll find out who it was that I was channeling.
It's the sort of book I would imagine that once people have it, they could literally just say, open it up at random, and whatever page they open it up on, they're bound to find some sort of spiritual inspiration. Would you read it that way?
I would, and that's a great assessment, yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, the thing that I find interesting about the book itself, you had mentioned in the intro that I had hosted a radio show, and I don't know what it is on your end. I don't know how it works as far as people sending you books, but when I was doing my radio show, I used to get books that were 200, 300-page books, techniques, tools, and which is great. This book is not that book. This book is unique in the way that it's more of a soul-to-soul book. It's not about leaving your mind to get to your heart. It allows you to see what the mind does to get you out of your heart, to get you away from a peace of mind. So the book is more soul to soul. So when your listeners read it the first time, they may have a series of questions. They may have a lot of questions. But if they read it the second time, they're going to just start to get it, whatever it is. Whoever they are, that presence, that deep presence that each of us are connected to, that one life, that one source. And so that's what I find truly unique about the book, is that it's not a tools and techniques book, although what you brought up is dead on. And you can pull it out at any time, and you can read a passage and just contemplate that passage, and that passage, whatever you choose to turn to at the time, whatever you're moved to, wherever your heart longing intuitively knows where to go, as you contemplate whatever passage you pull up, you'll begin to notice that it will pull you right into the soul.
Right. Now, the way that you've written the book is a story in a sense, because you have aspects of it when you talk about the storyteller, and then you talk about the queen. Now, those two figure quite frequently at one point in the book. So I must admit, I wasn't quite sure what the significance of them both was. So what do those names actually convey, or what should they convey to someone reading the book?
Well, the queen, I use the queen as your heart, as the feminine that is coming forward, that feminine space, that conscious place of consciousness itself. But as you connect into it, as you connect to your inner wisdom, you begin to see that the heart itself is the solar, is the connector, is the one that's leading everything, is leading the charge. The storyteller, which I use, is what they may use, like in the Course in Miracles, they would call the ego, or the small self, or the little me. I just call it the storyteller that's in each and every one of us, that is distracting us from the truth, that is trying to keep us from that peace of mind. So your listeners will begin to realize as they read the book that the heart is the leader, not the mind.
Okay, fine. Now, the first chapter in your book is called The Book of Story. So I picked out one or two just sort of expressions you use there to ask you to amplify on what they mean. Now, you spoke of the foolish storyteller. Give us an example of what you mean by that.
An example within ourselves?
Well, in whatever way you meant it to be conveyed to the reader. You talk of the foolish storyteller.
Yes, the foolish storyteller.
Is that now ego misleading us? Is that what you meant to say?
Yes, it's just another way of saying that ego is misleading us.
That it's
foolish in its ways, yeah.
So what you're possibly saying in the Book of Story is that we have to beware to some extent, I guess, of our ego in case it really takes us over.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. So your second chapter is the Book of Heart, and you've referred in there to it being the generator of now. So would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the heart, as you connect more deeply to your heart center, to the heart itself, you'll begin to realize that that I Am presence is where the I Am rests, is right there in the heart area. It doesn't rest in the mind. And a lot of people, when they're working with chants or they're working with all sorts of things, start off believing that the I Am is a mind-generated system. So what the Book of Heart demonstrates and what it means by generating in the now is that it generates the connection to the infinite, to all possibilities, that you're loved, that right where you are, there is no problem, that by simply listening to that generation of now, that infinite source, that the all-encompassing allness of all, as you're with it, as you connect to that within yourself and you connect to it in the whole, you'll begin to see that right where you are is, it's not starting over, there's no beginning, middle, or end, but there are infinite amount of choices and ways that you can go without sitting in your life thinking that there's a problem.
Okay, that's fine. Now, in your chapter 3, which is the book 3, Book of Innocence, you talk of it being the wonderment of life. I assume by that you mean, as we say, a young child who is not in any way primed or had its thoughts rigidly set in place, that you see things genuinely as they are, and you can see the wonder in everything around you, like nature and things like that. Would that be a reasonable understanding of what you're conveying there?
Yes, and I love the way that you conveyed it. Yeah, there's a sense of wonderment in a child, and there's a sense of wonderment in all of us. And as we're coming back into our connection, which each and every one of us are in our own way, as we're discovering the place in which we've been yearning for some of us a lifetime or years, or depending on where you are in your life, lifetime. And we've been doing the work, and as we're starting to come back into who we are and let go of the small-mindedness and the foolish storyteller and all of that nonsense, we begin to start to settle into awareness. And as we're in awareness, we begin to have clear seeing. And in that clear seeing is that wonderment, is that innocence.
So do you think that people are aware that they have, if you like, two aspects of themselves, that they have this sort of ego mind that tries to lead their life for them, although it's the person themselves that has, if you like, invented the ego. But behind that is what I would call your higher self, which probably you might call your intuition, which guides your life probably on a better path. So do you think that people understand perhaps that they do have a higher self and an intuition that they would be advised to follow?
It's a good point. And the first thing that pops up is a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about ego and love and God and devil and all sorts of things. I don't necessarily know how many people actually believe that they're actually fighting with themselves on a daily basis. That, and I brought this up at a talk the other day, because people use language in life, and you've heard it yourself, where they'll say, yeah, I'm not good enough, I'm unworthy, I'm lacking, or I'm limited. And we just kind of take those words as nonchalant, because everybody's saying them most of the time, and it's just become the language of our society. And so I challenged the audience where I was at, and I said, the opportunity here is when those words could come up inside of you to look at it as inner violence. inner violence against the higher self, inner violence against that which is real, which is authentic, which is natural. So you're having an inner violence, a war within yourself over what is true. And so many people love the show, and the show could be meditation, it could be prayer, it could be chanting, it could be dancing, it could be yoga, all wonderful modalities. But it is that yearning to come back home that people don't want to do. So to answer your question in a long, roundabout way, I don't necessarily know if people know that we have that those two things going on inside of us. And if they do, if they're willing to do the work to understand that higher self, their real, authentic intuition.
Yeah. I suppose it is difficult for people who haven't reached that point in their evolution where they feel suddenly inspired to find out the real meaning of life, you know, their purpose of being here. I guess until they reach that point, they are, generally speaking, very materialistic, and they follow what everybody else does, which is to, I guess, believe that life is meant to be enjoyed, and why not? But they don't give the time to their spiritual side. So do you think that's a natural progression, that people go through a period of perhaps being unawakened before something inspires them or brings them to that point where they suddenly want to know more information?
Yeah, I do, and you know, for some people, that's tremendous amounts of pain. For some people, that's a health crisis. For some, for somebody, that means that they lose everything. You know, for one person out of 7 billion on this planet, maybe there's an instant where it all just shifts and they get something that they never knew. So I believe that for everybody, it is a journey of glimpses, of moments, and then they start to become bigger and bigger. I'm just using a label to try to explain an experience. So, yeah, I believe that as people begin to want to find out what will bring them peace, what will, you know, I think there's that, the ancient Egyptians, I can't remember who used to say it, but, you know, what brings you joy?
Yes.
And have you brought joy to somebody else's life? If you can answer those two questions, then you've lived a pretty good life.
Right. Now, you have a book of what you call play, and you talk of play and love as being one. So what would be an example of what you call play, which also is, I suppose you're going to say, is based on the energy of love?
Yeah, play to me is a place within you that even if the world is depicting that what you're doing is a mistake, to you it's just another place to be. So you don't see it as a mistake. You just look at it as part of just this adventure that you're on, this adventure in love, that you're in this vibration of playfulness. And to give you a good example of that, many years ago I had the opportunity to not only act in theater and on film and TV and commercials, but I also had the opportunity to do a lot of improv. And one of the things that I really love about improv is something that I would hope down the road that adults in particular would start to incorporate into their life, which is a sense of play, which is a sense of just showing up to life and enjoying the process as life itself is unfolding and showing us new ways to be and new ways to grow and just new ways to just open up and laugh a lot more than we give ourselves a sense to. And improv, what I like is the first rule of improv is to not negate. So that means that if, Mike, if you were to walk into a room and we were in a scene together and you went, "Hello, Dr. Brown," I couldn't go, "I'm not a doctor."
Yeah.
It ruins the scene, right? We can't play. But the moment you go, "Hello, Dr. Brown," and I go, "Hello, Mike." Mike's my nurse, right? And then you play the role of the nurse, and we do a scene together. So it's wonderful. There's a wonderful sense of play, and we're here to play. We're here to have fun and to break our hearts open. You know, a lot of people look at breakups as, you know, a breakdown, but we're here to break out, like to break through our hearts, these hearts that are burdened by conditions. So for me, playfulness and love are the same, as they have the same vibration.
Yes, of course, you could express that in many ways, like joy, happiness. Yeah, I can see the point there. It's all sort of play and love. They're all aspects of the same energy. Right, now, your second to the last book is the Book of Stillness, and you talk about the Aum. Do you mean the Aum, which is toned when some people do meditation?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Right.
So are you saying,
in other words, that if people want to find that stillness, then they would be perhaps well advised to find a meditation where they use the Aum to heighten their energies or raise their energies? I mean, how are you referring to it in your book? I mean, what do you expect people to take from it?
When you're in that place, when I rest in calmness or peace or stillness, however the label may be, but that place where thoughts no longer are, just that serene place, it's the same resonance within my being, the same vibratory resonance that the sound Aum brings.
Yeah.
There's a sense of music within that stillness that there is no more label, and it is one, and we are all in this together. So that's what I guess is inferred by stillness as being Aum.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think anybody that's done that type of meditation, especially in a group, will find it a very pleasant and peaceful experience. And it's quite a powerful energy, I think, that's generated by toning that sound.
Yeah.
Now, your final book is The Book of Light, which I think, for me, is probably perhaps the most important one. Certainly one
yeah.
that attracted my attention quite a bit. And it reads in a way, and I think this is what you perhaps intended, as the story of creation and our sort of life's path. Would that be a fair assessment of what you meant to convey there?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Right, and you call the light the origin, which is fair enough. I mean, we can call the light the origin, the source, God. I mean, people have many names for it. And you talk of it, I think, quite correctly, saying there is only light and we are light. But if you said that to the average person, they probably wouldn't have a clue as to what you meant. I mean, if somebody said to you, what do you mean by that, how would you explain it to them?
Well, here's a classic, and I'm glad that you brought that up. Someone actually made a comment about my book on Facebook, which is extraordinary, because I wish that they would have just emailed me the comments so that we could have a dialogue. But that's just the state of social media, where people just make blind statements without asking what it means. And it was in regards to what you just brought up, where they made the suggestion to their group that, you know, life, they don't care about, you know, light or a lot of other things, you know, or I'm sorry, they don't care about, like, the Book of Light or other things because, you know, we're in it. Like, we're in life, and life has these, you know, I'm with life. It's a grind, and it's a struggle. And so when you bring up light, my aunt had trouble with the word light when she got the book, and so she liked to use the word energy. So energy made sense to her. So if I was talking to someone that, let's say, wasn't into a religion or wasn't into God or had issues with the word God or any of that stuff, I would simply just say that what we're talking about is energy.
Yeah, that's fine. Right, I'm picking out odd statements from here and there that you mentioned. Now, I guess this one is fairly self-explanatory, but I notice you said that a child is innocent until made to feel guilty, and I think we see that with young people. I mean, when they're very young, they have no inhibitions, and whatever they feel, they express, and I'm sure for a long time, if they say things, that's truthfully what they feel or mean, but it can sometimes then be moulded by their parents or their peers who say, you shouldn't say this, you shouldn't do that. So I guess that when you said that a child is innocent until made to feel guilty, that is really what you're referring to.
Yeah, definitely. And what's interesting is, as you know, just in your life experience, that when you control something, it doesn't grow. It has trouble growing. And we have a tendency sometimes in our society with all different realms in our society with control and not allowing people the freedom to grow or people to have the freedom which, you know, they're entitled to, their innate freedom, their freedom to, you know, think and be and express and live and express who they are. And so a lot of people feel bad about expressing who they are because they don't fit in. You know, there's a lot of things that people have to move through to come back home. So, yeah,
I suppose as young people grow up, that's why often at some stage, perhaps in their very early teens, they start to rebel against their parents or authority. It's because they are having their own expressions stifled, and they're not allowed to be themselves.
Yeah, did that ever happen to you?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm getting on a bit now. You're pressing my memory buzz to remember back that far. But no, I think it's certainly in my time, I mean, we weren't living in quite what we would call here Victorian times, but there was a tendency to say that little children should be seen and not heard. You weren't encouraged to express yourself or really talk to your parents as one adult to another, even if you were a young child. So, yes, I guess there was a degree of control by telling you to keep quiet.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously, as the years pass by, you do find your true self and your true expression. You can't keep it sort of under wraps the whole time. Now, what did you mean by saying in stillness there is no end?
In stillness there is no end. It's infinite. In the story in your mind, the ego story, there's a beginning, middle, and end. There's a character involved. There are many characters involved. There's something happening. And then let's say that you go into forgiveness and you forgive the character in your life, a family member, a friend, a stranger. Something happens and you forgive them. Well, that ends. That ends the misery. Or that ends whatever's supposed to end at that point. But when you're in stillness, you're in this vast spaciousness that is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So there is no end. The mind believes that there's an end, obviously. The mind believes that when your body ends, that's it.
Yeah. Of course, that belief is unfortunately one of the, I guess, the worst ones for determining the way in which a person lives their life, because if they think they only have one life and that the end is the end, it surely must affect them quite deeply. There's a tendency to say, I'll enjoy myself while I can, and maybe they don't dedicate much of their time to their, well, they wouldn't understand about their spiritual growth. And we who believe in reincarnation know that your evolution, spiritual evolution, is ongoing the whole time, and you come to the earth for a particular purpose. So it's a bit sad, really, if people think that they only have the one life and that death is the end of it. But how do you sort of get to them and sort of wake them up?
Well, you know what got to... I was at a Unity church talking about the book. And so I started off with what they would consider the end of their life, like right where they are. And I said, when you sit with someone that's dying, whether it's a minute before they go, or an hour, or a couple days, or 3 days, they start to lighten up. And as they lighten up, they begin to start to see that this whole mess that they've had their life in, this thing that they called, as you brought up, that one life, well, I just have this body, so I'm just going to do what I want. Or I'm going to live, you know, live in it as best as I can. So they start to realize that the dramas, the resentments, the judgments, the chaos, the struggles, the negativity, the positivity, all these things in which they held on so close to, these identities. As they get closer to their death, those burdens start to go away, and you start to really see the soul emerge, and you really start to see the light of the soul come through that vessel. And so as that light comes forward, so if they're coming back home, as that light's starting to get bigger and bigger and bigger, they go, and the body's there. Now you just have this body without any light. And so I explain that to them. And as I explained to them in that process, I said there's an amazing process with sitting with people that are dying. It's amazingly open. You know, as you get closer to the end of the body, of this body, it's incredible to watch the lightness that the body has as the soul starts to, like, discover its freedom again, starts to just go back home. You know, like, it's like, oh, okay, this is over with. Now I can go to where I'm supposed to go. And so that's how I start to wake people up, is by explaining to them the process of death, and that right now that they have a choice to look at their life in a new way. Is it the moment that they're at their deathbed, and as they're sitting in their deathbed, they go, gosh, I wish I woulda, or I coulda, or I shoulda, or I shouldn't? Or do they look at their life right now and go, wow, you know what, I could do that right now. I could start to shift right now. I could start to look at my life in a new way right now. Like, I don't have to be burdened by these stories that I'm telling myself anymore. I don't have to be burdened by the inner war that I'm having, or this inner fight. I don't have to be burdened by the doubt and confusion and lack of energy and all sorts of nonsense that, you know, people go into. I can actually start to go inward, and as I begin to go inward, I can start to be with this energy or authenticity or however you want to look at it, this higher self. And so that's one of the ways that when I speak, that I help people at least wake up to who they are in that kind of way.
Yes. Do you believe that we all have guides that perhaps inspire us and try to guide us on the path that we really have chosen?
Yes. You say we have guides?
So really, people should be aware of that, so that if they have these moments when they are confused or perhaps need some sort of help, they can mentally send out a thought to their guide for whatever help it is they want, or information, and sort of leave it with them to somehow cover it for them. It's nice, I would think, to be comforted by the idea that you're not alone in your journey.
I agree. I definitely agree. I mean, I've done that work with Archangel Michael. and Metatron and Raphael and Sekhmet from ancient Egypt and my guardian angels and angels and people that have passed over that I know.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful space to realize when you do that with your telepathy and you are talking to something, whether it's an angel or your guide, however you view it in your life. Very comforting to get reassured when you get an answer back.
I think so indeed. Because at times when it's not going too well, life can be extremely lonely and you can feel very isolated.
Definitely.
Now, I'm still in your last book, of course, the Book of Light here. Now, you talk about the light created a being called God. Now, in that case, are you really talking about the source creating a being called God? I mean, would you like to explain what you meant there?
Yeah, I was referring to, I believe it's in the part of the book where they've already created the stories and they've got different sides, right? Is it in the middle of the Book of Origins?
Well, this particular sentence, funnily enough, I made a note of it, was on page 46 in the book of Light.
Right, the origins of light, right. So,
yeah.
Exactly. And what my suggestion there was, if I heard it right, was what you just said. Yeah.
Right. Because you were saying that you suggested because most lights still believe God is a man-woman, and when you create a story, you need a villain, and that villain was called the devil. And he went on to say, lights recognize that all good stories need a villain to keep it going. So
that was
a particular statement that you made there, and I was just sort of curious to know whether when you said the light created a being called God, whether you believe, as some people do, that there is a source, which again some people call the origin, who has created the gods of the different universes. So that was behind my question there. I just wondered what you meant, and if my interpretation was the same as yours there, or what you intended.
Yeah. Right, I was just going to say,
you talk of the light instructing people that dark and good don't exist in the one. Now, if dark and good don't exist in the one, what is the interpretation of the one?
Well, the interpretation is, I would say that the interpretation isn't the label of how we would consider good or bad, or good or evil. It is between those or beyond those two things. Because if you have good, that means that you have to have bad. For example, there are a lot of people that are positive, and then when you talk to them after a certain amount of time, they're actually really negative people. But they use positivity to mask the negativity. Right?
Yes.
So they're taught to use, well, I'll just use these words because it feels good, which is good. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But most of the time, to have a positive, you have to have a negative. So wherever the opposite is, you're going to find the other space. And a good example for your listeners would be people that maybe might be going through some sort of issues of lack. And so rather than being with the space of lack, they go, well, I don't want to feel lack. I don't want to feel this pain, right? So they create pleasure for themselves by telling themselves, I want to be abundant or wealthy, and what keeps showing up is lack. So they don't want to look at what's coming up. So source, origin of everything doesn't work that way because it created everything in its likeness. So there is no good or bad, even though we use the label of good, because all is infinite, all is loving, all is created from that one source. It's the separation from source that's created all the mischievousness.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought a very good explanation for talking in the sense that there is no such thing as dark or good or bad or evil, is that everything is simply an experience, and it's only we that put these names to them.
I love it. I love that. I love it.
Yes, because I think the reasoning goes that God created man and woman, and he gave them free will. So in having given them free will, whatever you choose to do, although we have our own views as human beings on what is, say, good or evil, it's still an experience that you've chosen to do, and therefore it's not actually evil in the strictest sense. Which is a funny way to look at it, but I can see the point myself.
Yes, I can too.
Right, now,
yeah.
I think a profound statement that you made also in the Book of Light is that each one of us is the One. So what are we if we're the One?
That I am presence, where that the presence itself, we're presence listening to presence. And I'm talking about beyond your identification with your story, your history, your life. So I'm talking about in pure awareness, in that pure aware state, you are it expressing that light. You are just so powerful. You're such a powerful soul. You know, like I've... We've all been around people, and we've all felt their energy, and you know, and that's what I mean by that is, you know, you've been around people that light just emanates from them, that you just want to be around them, that when you look into their eyes, it's crystal clear, and you're like, wow,
Lovely,
pure love.
Yeah. Now, just getting on to a slightly different subject now.
Yes.
Did you, as a lot of people thought and participated in, recognise the 21st of December 2012 as an important key point in our spiritual evolution? I wanted to know what you thought about it.
Yeah, I believe that we're still in it, that we're still evolving in it. And we'll probably out of it in probably like the next, I don't know, 15, 20 years. But we are in a very important part. You can already start to feel a shift among a lot of people, and people are feeling agitated and crazy, and they're in this space where they want to go and fight the government and do all sorts of stuff. But our call here as light workers or energy workers or just servants is we're here to just bring love, to bring that unconditional love. And so we are entering the space which we naturally are. We're not spiritual beings or human beings. We are beings. And we are higher states of being than we've been playing out. And we've been caught up in the third dimension and the energies in the third dimension for 2,000 years. So it's wonderful now in this space where we're at to start to see that what you had brought up earlier with that like inner fight or that third dimensional ruckus that we're in. But it's starting to dissipate now. And that we're all starting to start to feel that something's happening. A lot of people are feeling that through agitation. But I really feel like the movement that we're going in right now is a really special movement. And like I bring up in my book, we're all coming back into light. We're all coming back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm inclined to think, as quite a few people do, that the energy connection that occurred on the 21st of December lifted us up into a slightly higher frequency, and some people actually talk of us having already moved out of the third dimension into the fourth. Would you agree on that?
I feel like we're still moving. We still have a lot of people that are, you know, there are a lot of people around the world that are doing work that are doing the work. Because I've also heard that some people are suggesting that, you know, with the fifth dimensional energy, that, you know, is bringing us up. But I wouldn't disagree with that. It feels like we're still moving in that direction.
It feels like you're
in a higher dimension.
Beg your pardon?
It feels like you're in a higher dimension. Do you dwell in those higher, like you're a high priest?
It's possible. Yeah, I tend to think there are levels within each frequency, and we're clearly not all exactly at the same point. There must be variables there that allow or make some people in a slightly more advanced frequency. So, yes, I mean, and I ask you the question because I think a lot of people still are held back in the third dimension, but then I also think that particularly with the 21st of December and the high input of energy, that quite a lot of people have got 1 foot or maybe two feet in the sort of fourth dimension.
Right, and I agree with that, and some people even in the fifth dimension, yeah.
So evolution is ongoing, and everything seems to be speeding up. I think most people you speak to sense the, and have done for some while, that time has speeded up. And I don't think this year so far is any different. I mean, to think we're already nearing the end of the second month is quite astonishing, the way time is flying by.
Yeah. Yeah, we're losing the aspect of time.
Well, I think this is the point, really, isn't it? We're losing touch with time as we have been used to it, because there will come a point where linear time won't actually have any more bearing for us, and going either further down our path, everything will then become in the now, and we won't refer to time or use it in the way that we are now.
That's true, I agree with that.
Now, I've spoken about odd points here and there out of your book, which I think is very good as I mentioned earlier on, as a type of reference book. I think if you just want a couple of thoughts of the day almost, you could just put your finger anywhere in the book and just sort of read a couple of bits there, and you've got something to think about, because they're quite, in the main, quite sort of powerful statements that you make in there. But is there any aspect of the book that maybe I haven't touched upon that you would like to talk about yourself?
No, thank you. I feel like you've done a pretty good job with it. I mean, like I said, I touched on it earlier. One of the things that I truly just love about the book in general is its simplicity, and that in simplicity, it's profound. And we forget that, as you brought up just a couple minutes ago, as we become more and more present in your life, you begin to live more and more in this space that we'll label as now, here. There's a sense of ordinariness. But in that ordinariness is how extraordinary you really are. And there's a deep surrender, a deep peace with that. And one of the things that I love about the book is that it is guiding you with this evolution that is taking place right now on this planet. And I love the fact that it's a soul-to-soul book, and that you could pick it up anywhere in the book and contemplate things. It still makes a difference in your life. Because we're leaving kind of this linear time frame. And when you get into that stillness, it feels like it's almost abstract, like ideas are coming from places that you wouldn't even gather they were coming from. And to me, that's ordinary living, to live in kind of that abstract place. But for a lot of people that are linear, that's not normal. And so it's wonderful that you can have a book where you can kind of just pick out anywhere and contemplate it, because it shows that it's almost like spirit talking to spirit.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that. Yeah, it's a very easy book to read in that sense, and although you clearly didn't intend every point you make in each story to be read separately, because it does follow on. I mean, in the each book, there is a story of a kind, so it's got both, really. It's got a story to follow, and yet, as you've just said, you can read any part of it at any time, and you've still got something to give you something to think about, which is rather nice. Is that the only book you've done, by the way, David?
Well, it's my first published book, but my second book. I actually wrote a book with my dialogue with Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
And I wrote that 7 years ago.
Oh, did
you? It's called Mary and Me. It was never published, but now maybe I'll revamp it and see if it'd be published, because now's a good time for people to listen to her words.
Yeah. Well, as they say, do what you feel inspired to do. Follow your intuition.
I love that.
Now, just as a totally side issue here, because I'm curious about this, your email address starts off Senjaze. What, is there any real significance in why you use that name? Because if I remember correctly, isn't that the name of the female contact that Billy Meyer had?
Yeah, it's a Pleiadian.
A Pleiadian?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. So what did it mean for you then? Why did you... I mean, what do you know about Senjaze?
I just know about the work that was done and some of the writings, and I love it. And, I've been to some channelers and readers, and they've suggested that I'm connected to the Palladians and Arcturians, and so I have a strong connection.
That was nice. I thought you picked it totally by accident, and I wonder why.
No, not at all. But I love that you asked me, because some people just see my email and they ask me what it's about. I go, look it up.
Yeah,
they look it up, they're like, wow, we have a lot to talk about. Maybe I'm an alien. Maybe I'm Arcturian just as a human.
Right. Now, where have we got to here? I've almost finished really asking you the questions that I've made a note of. I'm just having a quick look to make sure I've covered them all. It looks as though I have. So I think we can just sort of cover the last few minutes here by asking you one or two questions. Now, am I correct in thinking that you haven't got your own personal website?
I do. I don't have a personal website, because I work on referrals.
Yeah.
Although the more, I'm starting to do a lot of radio and TV interviews, so people are asking me. So I'm actually getting one made. And it will just be my name. It will come out next week. It will just be my name, davidmatthewbrown.com.
Okay, let me just jot that down. So it's going to be your name, full name, or just David Brown?
Yeah, just my full. It will be my full name, davidmatthewbrown.com.
davidmatthewbrown.com. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so it's davidmatthewbrown.com. Okay, I'll make a note of that. Now, I gather that you do sessions with clients. Would you like to tell our listeners exactly what you do?
Yeah, I work as a... I graduated from Agape International Spiritual Center in Culver City, where Michael Beckwith is in charge of the spiritual center there. So the sessions that I do, my emphasis is in bereavement support and crisis support, but I work with people in all different areas, and I work with them on a... I counsel, I do that. I also do energy healing and sound healing. So I work where the person's at. I kind of work where the client's at, where they're open. Some people aren't open to energy and sound right now, which is fine. So I do spiritual counseling with them. Some people are open to it, so I do energy work with them. Yeah, I do a lot of work with hospice care and bereavement support, and a lot of people pass away in front of
me. Right. You're a busy man. Now, you mentioned healing there. What do you do on the healing side?
That's what I do. I do my energy work. I do Sekhmet healing. I use energy.
You do it on a one-to-one basis, or do you do absent healing? I mean,
yeah, I do. I do distant, and I do one-on-one healing.
You do,
person. And some people have suggested some people suggest that when I speak to groups, that there's a healing happening.
Yeah. Oh well, keeps you going. Well, I think that's probably come to the end of the program for me, David. I can't think of anything else. I seem to have covered most of the bits that perhaps you might view as important. I know you've, in your own time, when you were a radio host, you had some very interesting people on your programs, but, of course, that's another story for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. I had about 365 people on my show, and it was called Inside Out, and I had Desmond Tutu on, and Byron Katie, Gary Zukav, Don Miguel Ruiz. I had a lot of people that people have known and a lot of people that people don't know. I've had channelers on and readers and healers and energy workers, so it was a great show. I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, David, I'm going to have to say thank you very much for coming onto my program. It's been interesting talking to you about your book, and so it's nice, easy reading, and I'd certainly recommend it to someone who wants a broader picture. I think that's the way I would describe it. So thank you very much for coming and having a chat with me.
Mike, I love you, and I love your work. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much. All the best, and
bye-bye.
I wish you every success with your book.
Thank you, Bob.
Right, friends, that was David Matthew Brown. It's a nice little book. It's not too big, and it's full of interesting statements, as you might call them. Now, next week, I've got Guy Needler coming in to have a chat. He's been on twice before with me, and he is the author of what is known as the God Book, and the book is called God. And Guy is a very unusual person in the sense that he can just at will contact the source. And it was rather amusing, the last program that I did with him, because I asked him a question that he couldn't answer directly. So he said, hold on a minute, and quietly, of course, he contacted the source and got the answer to my question, and I thought that was wonderful. But I genuinely believe that Guy does do what he says. He does contact the source. And I've asked him to come along because he can tell us what his views are about the ascension that's just passed. And I'm sure he's got some comments about our future that lies ahead. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.